The following presentation is brought to you from the supporters of the Church of the Sovereign God.
Shortly before Jesus' death and then resurrection, he delivered a major anti-prophecy to his disciples, and this is all recorded for us in the books of Matthew chapter 24, Mark 13, and Luke 21. So if you would, please go with me to Matthew 24. Go with me, please, to Matthew 24. Matthew 24 and verse 3. And he sat up on the Mount of Olives. His disciples came unto him privately, saying, "Tell us, when shall these things be, and what shall be the sign of your coming and of the end of the world?" And then it's interesting because it says in verse 4, "And he answered them." And so we know that what follows is an answer to that question. It's a three-part question. What is it going to be like? Would you tell us? And he answers the question. And so he then gives a description of conditions and events that were going to lead up to his second coming. He also says something else. He said, of all the things in this these three different chapters, this one story just told three different ways. But of all these signs, it says, when they become evident, his return would occur within that generation. Matthew 24 and verse 34, it says, "Verily I say unto you, this generation..." Now we can go back and read all the things, all the signs, all the conditions, all the events that he's talking about. But he says, when all of these things are happening, "this generation shall not pass till all these things are fulfilled." So, brethren, a question I think it would be good for ask is, could this generation that he is talking about be this generation? Could it be our generation? And, of course, we can think about it that through the nearly 2,000 years since Jesus gave this prophecy, pretty much every generation has thought that theirs was going to be the one at the time of his return. Many, many places in Scripture we can see that. And of course, we also know that it has turned out to not be true. Yet, it is interesting to know that there are a number of Bible prophecies that could not have been fulfilled until our generation. In a prior sermon entitled End Time Prophecies Part 1, we looked at that time into two of those end time prophecies that could not have been possible until this generation, till our generation. The first one we looked at was the human race would have the ability to exterminate itself, and the second one was a Jewish homeland had to be reestablished in the Middle East. And so today in this sermon that I have entitled End Time Prophecies Part 2, we're going to continue to look at some of those end time prophecies that could only have been fulfilled in our generation. So let's begin part two with the prophecy of the end time king of the north and king of the south. Now, if you'd like to, go ahead and write on your paper who you think they're going to be. In Daniel, we have an amazing prophecy about two leaders, the kings of the north and kings of the south. It's fascinating reading, and if you're into any of this kind of thinking, prophecy, whatever, that's the place to go. This is the book to study, and these are some of those kinds of things. And Jesus does make reference to all of that and to the book of Daniel. But anyway, they were the heads of regions that were geographically north and south of Jerusalem. So when they are referred to as king of the north and king of the south, they were talking about regions that are, I mean, it's not 100% directly north or directly south, but in biblical terms, one would be more to the north and the other would be more to the south. It might actually be more northeast and the other one may be a little bit more southwest, but they're still north and south. And so that's, you know, let's not get bent out of shape, you know, when we go through and see some of these things. And if you pull out your map and go, that's not north and that's not south, it is in biblical terminology, you know, and so it's a thing to take a look at. But brother, for us to really understand this prophecy, we need to go back into history to the time of Alexander the Great. Alexander figures prominently throughout the book of Daniel. Even though Daniel did not know his name, he had never met him, yet God had told him, revealed to him many, many different things about this incredible leader, Alexander the Great. And now we know that he didn't meet him and didn't know anything about him because Daniel actually died before Alexander appeared on the world stage some 200 years or so. And yet, as I said, God revealed to Daniel that after Babylon had fallen, Persia would rise up as the greatest nation at that particular time. And that would be followed by Greece. And when you really think about it, this should not be any surprise because the prophecies regarding to the rise of Greece are centered on Alexander the Great. And that's what he really focuses so much, Daniel focuses on in the book. And Alexander was going to prove to be one of the greatest conquerors in history. And Daniel talks about Alexander the Great without naming his name, without knowing who he was, roughly 200 years before Alexander even comes on the stage, in chapters 2, chapter 7, chapter 8, and chapter 11. Now, we're going to read some verses in pretty much all of those chapters, but in Daniel 2, Alexander's empire is described as a belly and thighs of bronze. Now, it's really as brass. It's not really bronze. The correct word really there would be brass, which was part of King Nebuchadnezzar's vision of this great statue of a man. We've all seen it. We've seen it in church literature over the years, you know, this tall figure and all. And so Daniel is describing it as Nebuchadnezzar dreamed it, and then he tells Daniel to tell me what it's about, and he tells him about it. And so that's who he's being identified as. And you can see that we're not going to read all of these verses, but you can read it. Daniel 2, verse 31 and 32 and verse 39. Then in chapter 7, Alexander's empire is described as looking like a beast, and that beast is a leopard with four heads. Then in chapter 8, Daniel 8, Alexander's huge, vast empire is symbolized by a male goat with a large horn growing between his ears. That's verses 1 and verses 5 through 7. Now, we could read all of these, but I'm just telling you where it is because it's probably better just my telling you these things because otherwise it's going to kind of bog us down in some ways. Okay, so who was he? Who was this man, Alexander the Great? Well, his name was Alexander III of Macedon. We know Macedon more so as Macedonia because that's what Paul refers to it in the New Testament. He was commonly known as we know as Alexander the Great. He was the king of an ancient Greece kingdom of Macedon, and he was a member of the royal dynasty. His dad had been king before him. And anyway, he was born in 356 BC in Pella, Greece, and he came to power in 36 AD at the age of 20 when his father Philip II was killed. And then Alexander ruled for 13 years and died June the 10th, 323 BC in Babylon, Iraq at the age of 33. And yes, during that time, he became referred to as Alexander the Great. We're going to look at some verses in Daniel 11 a little bit later, but for now, go with me to chapter 8, where Daniel gives a vivid account of the coming conflict between Persia and Greece. Now, all of this is to help us understand the end time prophecies of the King of the North and King of the South. And I think we could just jump right into the end and deal with it, but I think it helps us to have the background to be able to know and to see it in a much broader way. And I really don't intend for this to be a history lesson, but it's going to be somewhat of a history lesson. Anyway, so in biblical terms, the word horn symbolizes royal power and authority. Now, it can be described as a lot of different things, but I think I can summarize it very short in stating it that way. Okay, go with me to Daniel 8 and verse 1. Daniel 8 and verse 1. In the third year of the reign of King Belshazzar, a vision appeared unto me, even unto me, Daniel, after that which appeared unto me at the first. Verse 2, the first part of the verse, and I saw a vision, and it came to pass. So that's an important thing to understand. He knows that it's going to come to pass. It hadn't come to pass when Daniel is writing this, but he has been inspired by God to write it, and it came to pass. Verse 3, then I lifted up mine eyes and saw, and behold, there stood before the river a ram which had two horns, and the two horns were high, but one was higher than the other, and the higher came up last. This verse 3, Persia is being referred to here as having the two horns. This is a reference to the Medo-Persian Empire, which was the coming together of two different nations, two peoples uniting and joining together. What we see is that the Persians rose to greatness after the Medes. So he says, but one was higher and came to be a stronger one, is what he's implying. Verse 4, and I saw the ram pushing westward and northward and southward, so that no beast might stand before him, neither was there any that could deliver out of his hand, but he did according to his will and became great. Verse 5, and as I was considering, behold, an he-goat came from the west on the face of the whole earth and touched not the ground, and the goat had a notable horn between his eyes. Okay. Well, I'm going to read the next two verses, verse 6 and 7. I'm going to read this in the NIV version because I think it's a little clearer. That's really the main reason. In verse 6 it says, and it came toward the two-horned ram I had seen standing beside the canal. Earlier it said river in the King James Version. And charged at it in great rage. I saw it attack the ram furiously, striking the ram and shattering its two horns. The ram was powerless to stand against it. The goat knocked it to the ground and trampled on it, and none could rescue the ram from its power. This is showing that Alexander the Great defeated Persia. I'm going to go back to verse 5 because I want us to see something in that particular verse where it uses the term the notable horn, and in some other translations it uses the term royal leader. That was Alexander the Great. And the phrase, touch not the ground, is an interesting prophecy because what it is talking about, the incredible speed that his army had in conquering the known world at that time. In fact, in these 13 years, now he took over some territory that was already part of what his dad had, but he then adds to it, and by the height of his empire at age 33, it covered an area of 2.1 million square miles. That is huge. And, as I said, all of this was achieved in a very short time because, as I said, he died at the age of 33. What is also interesting is that even his sudden and surprising death was prophesied. This is in Daniel 8 and verse 8. This is out of the NIV. The goat became very great, but at its height of its power, the large horn was broken off, and in its place, four prominent horns, the King James says notable ones, grew up toward the four winds of heaven. So what we are seeing is that Alexander died, and his empire was then eventually divided between four of his generals. Noted here as the four notable ones, or the prominent horns in the NIV. Two of these dynasties, two of these families, whatever you want to call it, was going to have and did have profound effect upon the people of Judah. The other two of the generals we're not even going to mention. Because what you see, brethren, is Judah was caught in the middle between these two armies, these two generals and their people. These two families were the descendants of Seleucus. I'll spell these names for you. S-E-L-E-U-C-U-S, who reigned this huge, vast empire from Antioch in Syria, north of Jerusalem. Duh, king of the north. And Ptolemy, that's P-T-O-L-E-M-Y, who ruled Egypt from Alexandria, which is south of Jerusalem, hence the king of the south. So we have here the reference of kings of the north and kings of the south. Now, Daniel 11 is a very long and detailed prophecy about the conflicts between these two powers. And these leaders, as I've already said, are referred to as the king of the north and king of the south. And something that is very important for us to understand and also is of great significance is that when these two went together, came together to do battle, the Jews got trampled on. Because one is north and one is south of that area of Israel. And the Jews, we could be saying Israel, you know, but anyway. And the thing is, this was to continue this way from the time of Alexander into the middle of the 2nd century BC, a period of about 200 years. So this goes on and on and on for some 200 years. Then suddenly, in Daniel 11, the prophecy jumps to the time of the end. I mean, he's telling all of these things, and then it just jumps to the time of the end. So let's go to Daniel chapter 11 and verse 40. And I'm going to read this, these 40 and 41 in the New King James Version. Verse 40, it says, at the time of the end, the king of the south shall attack him, and the king of the north shall come against him like a whirlwind, with chariots, horsemen, and with many ships. And he shall enter the countries, overwhelm them, and pass through. Verse 41. He shall also enter the glorious land, and many countries shall be overthrown, but these shall escape from his hand: Edom, Moab, and the prominent people of Ammon. So what we see is the latter part of this prophecy of Daniel about the kings of the north and kings of the south conflict describes a clash of peoples between what I could only describe as being a coming superpower. Could it possibly be European? And this is a revival of the Roman Empire that is a successor, let's put it that way, of Seleucus, Syrian rule and a leader who is the successor to the Ptolemy rule of Egypt, which is now part of the Islamic world. And brethren, I think if we just look, we can see and we can understand that we are now seeing geopolitical conditions lining up for this inevitable crash that is coming between these kings of the north and kings of the south, whoever they may be. Because all this is what is prophesied. So here's another prophecy that has circumstances where the stage has now been set within our generations. Could it have happened back in the time when Daniel is writing about it? You know, in the, you know, some 200 years after his death, before Jesus even birth, could it have happened then? No, because it's not the time of the end. You know, you have to put it all in the context of what is being stated. Because he's writing this, he's prophesying this, telling what's going to happen, and then he suddenly goes to, like I said, and you read it, and it's suddenly he goes to the end time. And the end of time, which is a prophetic, what is called a prophetic trademark, notification of a time, and that time, of course, is just before the return of Jesus Christ. And in prophecy, those are different signs that we look for to know when it is to happen. And that's one of them that we use to take a look at. So Daniel 11 describes the back and forth fighting between Seleucus Empire, which is based in Syria, that is the king of the north, and the Ptolemy Empire of Egypt, that is the king of the south. And brethren, let's please realize this. Back during the time of their conflict, in other words, back when it was live and these were really happening, these two generals, and now they're fighting one another, let's understand what I'm talking about. Back at that time, these nations were north and south of the Jerusalem, respectfully, and their battlegrounds were often in the land of Israel. I mean, one is north and one is south, and they would clash, and they were fighting in the land of Israel, and that's why it's north and south of Jerusalem. And, of course, we should understand that neither of these two empires exist today. However, verse 40 uses the term time of the end, meaning that period of time just before the return of Jesus Christ. So we have to ask, what nations are being referred to at the time of the end as the kings of the north and the south? Because the Roman Empire actually swallowed up both of these empires, at one time, I guess we could have stated that it would have been the Roman Empire. However, there's another point in history that we need to take a look at, and that is in 284 A.D. 284 A.D., the Roman Empire was split into an east and west halves. And that's going to play into all of this, and so this is why we need to see it. Then, there's not going to be a test on this, so it's not like you have to have all these dates and things. It's just to keep it straight and to see when it was. But then in 324 A.D., Constantine, now we've all know who Constantine is. He did a lot of things, some good and many bad. That's not what we're focusing on. But Constantine put the eastern half of the Roman Empire, he put the capital in a city that was called Byzantium, and he renamed it Constantinople, which today is Istanbul. And we've all heard of Istanbul. We've also heard of Constantinople, but it is now that area. I mean, so this is all part of, in answering this question, who are the kings of the north, the kings of the south? The Western Empire, because he was of the Eastern Empire, okay. The Western Empire continued down through the centuries by several revivals of what was referred to as the Holy Roman Empire. So we're sort of, I mean, it's in one sense, Israel split into two. You had the Northern Kingdom and the Southern Kingdoms, and we know about their history. The Roman Empire also, which took over the Grecian Empire, and these two generals that are now, that are fighting, the Roman Empire takes them over. And then later, the Roman Empire splits into two halves, an eastern and a western half. The western half is referred to as the Holy Roman Empire. And yet, it was the Eastern Empire that proved more enduring because it lasted all the way down to 1453 AD when the Turks captured the city of Constantinople after a fight of siege of 53 days. So once again, there were rival kings of north and south, and through this event, it helped to formalize an ongoing struggle between Christian Europe and Muslim Middle East. Now, just thinking this through, you know, just think this through, and if you know anything about any of this history, you can see this kind of falling in place. And again, it's an interesting prophecy to take a look at. And of course, as we're all aware, this situation does continue on today. I mean, all you got to do is simply watch television, and we are witnessing this conflict between Western civilization and Islamic civilization. Okay, go back with me now to verse 40. And we want to notice that the king of the north invades and conquers countries. That's what it says. The NIV, verse 40 says, at the time of the end, the king of the south will engage him in battle, and the king of the north will storm out against him with chariots and cavalry and a great fleet of ships. He will invade many countries and sweep through them like a flood. That's pretty descriptive. We could still say, yes, they don't know who it's talking about, and that's okay, but we see somebody's doing something, king of the north, king of the south, and the king of the north is the one that's swiftly going through. Okay. This is suggesting that the king of the south is composed of several nations, just like the modern Middle East is today. Because this is where all these things have taken place. This is where all the kings, North and South kings, have fought down through the ages. And so that's where we have to look at. And so he says he goes through and he takes over nations. He invades nations or countries. This is what it says. Now I want to read the A part of this verse in the King James Version. And at the time of the end shall the king of the south push at him. This phrase, push at him, instead of in the New King James, it says attack him. This phrase, push at him, I believe to be a better rendering of the Hebrew words that are there. Because the Hebrew there words mean to thrust. Now, when you do the study of the Hebrew phrase there, push at him, NIV, attack him, New King James, and I said that I think the push at him is a better one, is because we understand, even though from the Hebrew the word could be referring to a military attack, we need to also understand and realize from the Hebrew it also could mean, or even just as well mean, a religious or an economic or a culture assault, or all. And we tend to think that it has to be this military attack because of the way the wording is in some of the translations. But if you go back and just do the study of the Hebrew words, it doesn't necessarily have to mean that. It could be that. But it could be a combination of all of it. Now, are we seeing any of that in the world today? Of course we are. Of course we are. We're seeing religious attacks. We're seeing economics and cultural attacks. We're also seeing some not declared military actions as such, but they still are military actions. And so we could be seeing every one of those. Again, I use the word however. Whatever it is that the king of the south, whatever it is, the king of the north reacts to it swiftly and forcefully. Because that's also what it says in verse 41 and then also in verse 42. So let's notice verses 41 and 42. He shall enter into the glorious land. And of course, the glorious land is referring to the what we would refer to as the Middle East, not so much just Jerusalem, but it is is a term that is used for that whole area. So he enters into the glorious land, and many countries shall be overthrown. But these shall escape out of his hand, even Edom and Moab and the chief of the children of Ammon. In verse 42, he shall stretch forth his hand also upon the countries, and the land of Egypt shall not escape. So, here we notice the area that is targeted by the king of the north is called the glorious land, which is the area that we would refer to as the Middle East. So it's that whole area all through there. And then it says that these are the ones, the areas that are going to escape from this king of the north assault through these countries. Edom, Moab, Ammon, and which are all part of modern-day Jordan. Now, I have another thing that I can tell you why I think all of that happens, but it's not part of this one. But I think I have other reasons that we could interject, but I want here. So, brethren, it seems clear, at least it seems clear to me, that if this prophecy is for our day, and it surely seems to be, then the king of the south is represented by some of the and I'm going to use the word, Arab peoples of the Middle East. Because that's where the attack of the south, I mean of the north, king of the north, that's where it is. And he invades countries. So a question to ask is, could we be seeing this prophecy beginning to come to pass? This is an obvious area where we as believers should be keeping a watchful eye. This is an area that we should be focusing our attention on. Now, I'm not trying to embarrass anyone or any of that. However, I'm going to still make the statement. I think there are many people in the Church of God have no clue what the layout is, the countries that are in that part of the world. They know Jerusalem is over there, but they might not even be able to identify it on a map. They might not be able to identify the land of Israel on a map. They certainly may not be able to identify the different nations, peoples that make up the Middle East. And we need to be able to do that because this is what we're told to do. This is what we're told to do. Mark chapter 13. Remember, it's Matthew 24, Mark 13, and then in Luke, but in Mark 13, verse 32. But of that day and that hour knows no man, no, not the angels which are in heaven, neither the Son, but the Father. Take you heed. Watch and pray. What are we watching? And what are we praying for? Well, a major area that we're to be watching, of course, is the Middle East. What are we to be praying? Thy kingdom come. We're told that we're to be praying, Thy kingdom come. There's a lot of other things in that, what we would refer to as the model or the outline prayer that tells us what to pray and how to do it. But what he's telling us there is to pray for the return of Jesus Christ, for this end time event, for his to be coming. And we're looking at prophecies that are going to happen just before that. And we're to be, if we're asking for Jesus to return and we're seeing these prophecies, all these things are going to take place, then we need to be watching so that we will know. Because it says, you're not going to know the day or the hour, but you're going to be watching, you're going to be praying, for you know not what the time is. For the Son of Man is as a man taking a far journey who left his house and gave authority to his servants and to every man his work and commanded the porter to watch. Watch you therefore, for you know not when the master of the house comes. At even, or at midnight, or at the cock crowing, or in the morning, lest coming suddenly he find you sleeping. And what I say unto you, I say unto all. Watch. So I'm going to end part two here. Then in a future part three of End Time Prophecies, perhaps, maybe, we can cover additional topics. Well, and I'm looking at some possible topics such as an end time union of European nations, an end time rise and fall of Israel and Judah, the gospel being preached in all the world as a witness, the end time two witnesses. Brethren, I want us to understand keeping up with prophetic happenings is very important. Now, you know, I don't give a lot of sermons on prophecy because we don't always know the answers to some of these things, but this is a prophecy. These prophecies that I'm trying to focus on are things that Jesus tells us to watch for. And he says, and in that generation, That's the generation that you want to look to. And this is the first generation when all of these things can take place. I mean, after all, Jesus tells us as his followers why we need to keep up with these events. It's in Luke 21, Matthew 24, Luke 13, and Luke 21. All of these are those prophecies that he's dealing with. In verse 28, Luke 21 and verse 28, "And when these things begin to come to pass, then look up and lift up your heads, for your redemption draws nigh." The Aaronic blessing. And some of you are probably saying, "But you didn't give us all of the information." I gave you what I really believe that I know to be true. And God willing, we'll look at part three in another time. I don't plan to give them next week. I'm still working on some of those, but I do plan to give it, God willing, in a future time, and try and answer some of those events that I, prophetic statements and things that I mentioned. So, the Aaronic blessing. "And the Lord spoke unto Moses, saying, Speak unto Aaron and to his sons, saying, On this wise you shall bless the children of Israel, saying unto them, The Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord make his face shine upon you and be gracious unto you. The Lord lift up his countenance upon you and give you peace. And they shall put my name upon the children of Israel, and I will bless them." God bless you all, brethren. And watch.
For more information or answers to your Bible questions, please contact the Church of the Sovereign God. Our website is www.cotsg.org. That's www.cotsg.org. Or you may write to us at Post Office Box 89111. That's Post Office Box 89111, Tampa, Florida 33689.